Well, this might come as a surprise for a lot of people that don't follow me on Twitter, but this is officially going to be the last episode of Uncommon Commander, an unconventional EDH podcast. This wasn't a decision that just kind of came out of nowhere. This is something that I've kind of made a decision for the last few months now. And while that means that Uncommon Commander is stopping for at least the time being, does not mean that I'll be done doing a podcast, period. So check out the end of the episode once we get through this really fun episode I got here with Obs Q, and I'll let you know what's going on.
The squee mask on and off in between games, yeah.
Or between I'll be right back. Turns my microphone off, goes to the other one. Hey, everyone! Hey, Hobbs, do you have any reactions? Hold on a second. No, I pass priority.
Sup? It's season fucking 3.
Welcome to another episode of Unconventional, where we step away from uncommon rarity commanders and talk about magic in general, and sometimes even go a step further and talk about pop culture media or whatever happens to be applicable at the time. Today I am joined by Hobbs Q or Hobbs Goblin or, you know, just Hobbs if you know who I'm talking about. Hobbs the the back alley dealer.
The back alley dealer of artist groups. And mental health knowledge.
And being a soft dom of...
soft dom for self-care. It's very important. The amazing Mab brought up this concept and dubbed me the soft dom of self-care, and it's probably one of the best things I've ever been called in my life.
I thought that was incredibly... There's just so many things that I see. Twitter is simultaneously the most horrible and most amazing thing. But seeing you do a bunch of things, not only as the back alley artist proof dealer and not only being a mental health advocate, and doing, Better Days MTG, the hashtag Better Days MTG,
gotta have branding.
You know, you're also stuck in the middle of a lot of very eccentric people online, including, you being a goblin and having that energy in the middle of everything is just really, it's always a way to brighten my day when the timeline is full of whatever is going on in Magic Twitter these days.
Which could be anything, let's be honest. We don't have a clue. Yeah.
But what are we talking about today? What deck list you got here for me? What's happening?
So there's a charity event. The Predators for Change has different charity events that are usually like Phyrexian themed. They'll have people play as Predators, and they raise money for different charity events and have, you know, just a lot of fun with really going full in this like whole theme. This event is actually being set up to kind of raise funds for both Texas and Florida for kind of grassroots organizations to raise money related to trans healthcare and to trans rights. And they've expanded it. So by the time y'all are listening to this, the event is happening the week right before Halloween. And they dubbed it the Mirrens versus Phyrexian.
With an asterisk at the end.
Of the Mirren portion?
The Mirren portion specifically. I thought it was so funny when Light was like, so hey, you know, War of the Spark happened. March of the Machines happened. Oh, what giant Marvel MCU equivalent event happened in Magic recently? Turns out, upon inspection, that the amount of Mirrens, legendary, like, Mirren-equivalent creatures in circulation is quite small in comparison to the Phyrexians.
I mean, it's yes. I mean, because we've really only got Mirren's, you know, we could look at legends from New Phyrexia and from like Mirrodin Besiege and go back and you could, you know, I'm sure you could look at somebody like Kemba and be like, well, Kemba clearly was fighting against the Phyrexian invasion on her own plane. Or, you know, you could, I mean, you could theoretically look at, I'm trying to think of who, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like Malira, right? Like Malira, Silvaka outcast. You could have these people that maybe weren't given a creature type that is clearly Mirren. But yeah, there's not very many that were tied to the plane in the same way that you can identify legendary Phyrexians.
You know, the multiverse was breached, and therefore, different people showed up to run hands with the Phyrexians. They collectively chose to expand the list to include any of the team, basically any of the team ups that occurred during the invasion. So Thalia and the Gitrog, and Borboregmos and Fivelpip, and Linvala, and what's her name? The vampire lady.
Drana.
Yeah, Drana and, yeah. And Linvala and all that stuff, all those people are able to join the event, considering we needed to shore up the numbers a little bit.
You wanted people playing. You didn't want everybody to just want to be the Phyrexians. Hey. Or, you know, your Mirren options being so limited.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to play... Was it Jor-Kadeen and Malira and Malira and Koth and...
Koth, as long as you're allowing Planeswalkers.
Planeswalkers are part of the list, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, while I obviously have decks prepared, you are bringing an extra something to the table, and we're going to be...
So, yeah. In true goblin fashion, I threw all the rules out the window. This is why I did not know that planeswalkers were involved, because I did not look at the list. Because I decided to, I think, hit up light out of nowhere and to just give them a left turn. Just kind of put into their inbox, hey, what about this out of nowhere that is very goblin-like? I mean, in many ways, in multiple ways, it's goblin-like. So, yeah, should we talk about
it? Go for it. Take it away.
So people don't know, one of the things that I've been very excited by recently, so I co-host a podcast called the Goblin Lore Podcast, and we talked about this over there, is playtest cards. And by that I mean these cards that have been used at Gavin's Unknown event. So people don't know, these have been charity events that have been done at the Magic Cons. They did one at Gen Con, but they basically have been at all the Magic Cons for the year, including Vegas, and they basically created these cards that are playtest cards. They're what it would look like within internal wizards of a card being tested. It is a card that has been printed out and glued on top of another card that contains text with no artwork and kind of like mana cost, and that's about it. Well, there is a certain Mirren that I love, and that Mirren was first unceremoniously killed off stage. In between Mirrodin blocks, so between the original Mirrodin and when we returned to Mirrodin for New Phyrexia, he was just killed unceremoniously off stage. Comes back in March of the Machines, is now like welded to his best friend and is a Phyrexian,
which is the most disgusting, horrific thing ever.
Like he's literally been like melded with his best friend and turned into a Phyrexian. His dead corpse was reanimated to then fuse with his best friend. And his other best friend is also a Phyrexian, and I don't even know where she ended up. So, I'm talking about Slowbat. My buddy, Slowbat, he's good. We have done more episodes on Slowbat than any other goblin on the Goblin Lore Pod, and I am like, I guess the phase, you know, if Slowbat has a million fans, then blah, blah, blah. Slowbat has zero fans.
I'm dead. I'm no longer of this world. Yeah.
And I, apparently I'm a Phyrexian. So Slowbat, is in the story very, very – he's actually almost kind of part of the Resistance because he's working with Urabrask, but we don't really fully know what's going on. But he is a Phyrexian at this point, and he's melded with Bosch, and Gliss is off running around. So these are the three best friends that anyone ever had. And what we got is while I was building my deck in Vegas, somebody ran – like came up to me and was like, oh my gosh, Hobbs, did you see this card? Like, no, because if I had seen this card in my pool, you would have been hearing screaming throughout the halls of Vegas. And it was Slowbad, actually just fine. He is a goblin artificer. He's back. He's a goblin artificer. He is red black instead of just mono red. But our boy is back, and he has these kind of cool. So he's a 3/3 for three that is, we could sacrifice creatures and artifacts interchangeably. So if an effect asks you to sacrifice one of them, you could do either. So if you have something like an Ashnod's Altar that says you have to sacrifice a creature, you could sacrifice an artifact. If you have something like Phyrexian Altar, you could sacrifice an artifact to make the mana. If you have
Krark Clan Ironworks, you could sacrifice a creature. So you yes. turn your Ashnod's Altar into that. Oh, that's
yeah. So like you could sacrifice these things interchangeably, and then tap one, sacrifice, you get to put a rebuilding counter on Slowbad. Tap and remove three rebuilding counters, and you get a copy of Bosch. You get the the original Bosch. So his buddy is now separated, and he's rebuilding him. Everything. This is all on a simple card. There is so much flavor in three abilities, a static ability, two tap abilities, and a card name.
The first effect, no doubt, being a rules or logistics nightmare to try to get figured out. But because we're in this sort of unset reality.
Kind of. I mean, it works.
It works. It should just work.
It should. And so that's the thing. So I approached Light because I wanted to build this. And I said, you know, I asked them, can I do this? I did get told very quickly I was not allowed to use other playtest cards because there was some ridiculousness that I really wanted to include. It on theme. It was on theme. I will say it was on theme, but I do feel that it's 100%. Like, there's Mox Poison that you tap it for a mana of any color, and you get two poison counters. So, like, it's a zero casting cost.
Okay, yeah, no, that's a little insane.
So, it is. It's very flavorful. It's very on theme for the Mirren versus Phyrexian event. And, you know, I haven't played in one of these. It could be very dangerous to even tap it once and give myself two poison counters. I don't know what's going to happen. So, but understandably, I got permission to do this because I wanted to kind of show Slowbad through the years. So I have all the iterations of Slowbad. I have all the iterations of Slowbad. I did try to stay very heavy theme for Mirren and for like some stuff against the Phyrexians. I had to go out a little bit. And even then, so the initial list I sent you, I think has 106 cards.
At the moment, yeah.
Some of what made the first cuts from there is things that were completely like, I really like Mirkwood Bats. Mirkwood Bats did not make it. Mayhem Devil did not make it. War of the Spartans.
Dockside Extortionist.
Dockside did not end up making it. And, you know, for a while I had a goblin sub theme. There are a lot of goblins because there's things like most of the engineers.
So yeah, there's a lot of, yeah, they do have to
tinker,
be artificers. Yeah.
Welder. Yeah. And like, you know, like some of those are not great overall. Treasure Nabber, I think, works really well. But, it, you know, it's like I don't even have that yet because I haven't gotten one. But I did try to keep it. Like, one of the win cons would be making infinite mana into Goblin Cannon, which is originally from 5th Dawn. I want to say
5th Dawn. It looks like 5th Dawn's emblem, yeah.
Yeah, so Goblin Cannon is 4 mana. 2, it deals 1 damage to a creature or player. Sacrifice it.
But
because of how the stack works, is if you have infinite mana, you could stack, like, all the activations of it. So it'll sacrifice after the first one, but all the activations will still go off. So you have to just keep holding priority and be like, I'm going to hold priority, activate, hold priority, activate. But you could do that. So if I, you know, if I made 100 mana, I could activate it 50 times and then sacrifice it. Charbelcher is in here.
Goblin Charbelcher. Which was a real,
Goblin Charbelcher. Which is, you know, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a land card. It deals damage equal. I've got two of the stations in here, the salvaging station and the grinding station. A lot of the stuff that we saw that was related to basically taking you through the deck, your goal, it's eggs. So if people know the archetype of eggs, it was a deck that's since been banned.
Understandably so.
Understandably, for numerous reasons, and it's been banned in multiple ways. So it was a deck really built around Second Sunrise, which was a white spell that returns all artifacts that like went to your graveyard that turn back into play. You would be dumping artifacts into play, sacrificing them to something like Court Clan Ironworks to make colorless mana. Each of them, when they would go to the graveyard, would have an effect like draw you a card, etc. And then you would just keep Second Sunrising, bringing it back until you could basically loop something like a Pyrite spell ball.
Right.
And be just doing two damage to a person's face over and over again. It's a very convoluted deck to play. It went through numerous bannings before Kart Clan finally got the ban itself. Always just funny to me. But it
they're like, no, we have to let the cool card go off. And it's like, no, get rid of the really cool card. Don't get rid of the enabler.
The card's never done anything fair. I mean, there's certain cards that I love in Magic that avoided the chopping block for so long. The other being Simeon Spirit Guide.
The other being Dockside Extortionist. Anyway, moving on.
I have a lot of thoughts on that one. But Simeon Spirit Guide, same thing. I laughed every time it dodged a ban because that card's never been used to do anything fair.
No, it's like, wait, so you're telling me I could just pitch a card to get free mana out of nowhere? Yeah, as if pitching cards for free effects was never not broken?
Right. So I actually won I won a game of Modern on turn one on the play because of Simeon Spirit
Guide. Oh my god.
Because I hit with three mana, I could, you know, Faithless Looting Away Gristlebrand, reanimate Gristlebrand.
Back in the days when Modern could play Faithless Looting.
Yeah, so see, things like Faithless Looting, so I mean, but honestly, a big part of enabling that was Simeon Spirit Guide, and it kept dodging the ban.
Ugh, ridiculous.
Dockside is a fair card unless your opponents want to play greedy mana magic and play.
I would say
mana.
That Dockside Extortionist is a fair magic card when you play it, because I don't know. I'm just going off the last game we had where you're like, I could play Dockside at parity. I'm like, amazing.
Yeah, we did. We had a game where Dockside sat in my hand for a very long time and made no net mana because nobody was playing.
Statistic outlier.
I would say the thing is, in casual games, it is less of a statistic outlier. And oftentimes when it's good in casual, it's either good very late game or your opponents are ramping and using
artifact fast ramp mana. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes. Don't get me wrong. It can win me games. I play it in Slimefoot and Squee for a reason. If you loop Living Death and you're getting back Pitiless Pundler and Dockside, both good pirates, don't do anything fair. Ah! Did I just say that out loud? Cut it out.
No one heard anything. I promise I will cut it out. Don't cut that out.
Note to self.
Do not cut out. Yeah. So what you're telling me is you're not only cheating, but you're doing something that's very unfair in general, just by being able to loop a bunch of low cost artifacts to win the game.
So yeah, so basically what I'm trying to do with this deck is I am trying to get versions of things like Scrap Trawler, the Workshop Assistant, Mirror Retriever, so things that when they die get you back artifacts, or Scrap Trawler obviously being the highlighted one, because when something else dies, so other artifacts die as well, you can get a lesser mana cost one back to your hand. And if you get some number of these into play, you can basically generate infinite mana. Now, there's also a backup play that I love in this deck that came from a friend of mine's really, really old school Commander Eggs deck. And I'm talking 2011.
Okay. Yeah. Just when I started playing Magic. Yeah.
Pre-precons or well, right at that first precon. Because
first precon was in 2011. So it was around the first time there was actually like official Commander product.
I thought that was
2013. 2013 had Prosh and Derevi and that cycle. But the first one in 2011, from what I remember, was like Kalia and Animar.
Gave.
Gave, yeah. So that was the first Commander product was in 2011.
Okay, so then it would have been right around that time. Yeah, so it would have been either then or... So I started playing Commander in 2009. So my timelines sometimes get a little bit messed
your
up.
Your Magic timeline can get messed up a lot easier than your real life timeline. I always talk about it. It's like Magic timelines feel like they were forever ago, but you're like, no, it was 2 years ago. And then you're like, that's impossible. There's been like hundreds of thousands of new cards that have come out.
Yeah. Well, and I have been playing since 2002, so my timeline for Magic gets really
funny. It gets super weird, yeah.
And I was already an adult when I started playing, so I didn't start playing until after undergrad in 2002. So the other cool combo that you can do, and it's a lot easier to do now because like the whole point of Commander is redundancy. It used to be a combo that really used Wurmcoil Engine, with like an Ashnod's Altar or with KCI to basically loop Wurmcoil Engine with Nim Deathmantle.
Yep.
To get infinite dice trigger to then play Bitter Ordeal, the only card ever with Gravestorm. So if people don't know this card, and I didn't actually include a copy of it in my deck. I really wanted to, but it felt a little too cute and I couldn't find one in time. Let's be honest, that's the real reason. So Bitter Ordeal, if people don't know, is a sorcery that has Gravestorm. Gravestorm reads, when you play the spell, copy it for each permanent put into a graveyard this turn. You may choose new targets for this. So it's Storm, but for permanents going to the graveyard. And the effect is you search target player's library for a card and remove it from the game.
I feel like I'm... Oh, wait, hold on. No, I'm thinking of Bridge for Below. I thought I saw that. I was like, I thought they printed that card for whatever reason in the upcoming Exelon set. God. And I'm like, wait, yeah, which black graveyard-themed card am I thinking of that I thought I saw earlier today? And that was Bridge from Below, and that's a...
Bridge from Below, yeah, no. So Bitter Ordeal is from Future Sight.
Future Sight, yeah.
As with a lot of stuff from Future Sight, has not been reprinted. But... It was to play with this mechanic, and Storm's already broken, so Gravestorm has to
be broken. It has to be busted, absolutely.
So with things like Triplicate, Titan, and what's the other, the Triniform, Phyrexian Triniform,
yeah.
You could do kind of the same thing. So you can basically make indefinite mana, or make indefinite, like, comes into play abilities or leave.
As long as you use... I had Nim Deathmantle in hand I use it in Owl the Dawn Sky every time you're trying to find something you can sack to like an Ashnod's Altar or whatever so you can pay it back and bring it. Yeah, busted Magic card, who knew.
Yeah, no, it'd be so like it's fun to do. So in this deck, so with the Slobat, as you were kind of saying, I actually had a board state earlier when I was goldfishing and just playing ahead of us playing today, where I had Slobat out with KCI, and as we already went through, that allows me to sack creatures. Well, why this became relevant was because I ended up being able to go through this combo, but instead of using like Wurmcoil or Triniform or Triplicate, I was using Marionette Master.
Oh, what a Magic card.
Because Marionette Master could be sacrificed to the KCI.
Right.
So I could make colorless with it. So then I could basically make it, get three things off of it, and
Ping your opponents, keep bringing it back, ended up being Superman a positive, killing your opponent.
Well, so like every couple of iterations, you could also just have it come in as a four something. So to take one less time to kill people. But anyway, so like you can do that. You get to use the amazing, amazing card, Disciple of the Vault. Because same thing, you could do that there with Disciple of the Vault. So if you just loop things with the Nim Death Mantle, you can ping your opponents to death. So basically, right, like these were the ways, like I could make it a little bit better by playing things a little bit more off flavor, like Mirkwood or Mayhem Devil. I have ways to, like, how this originally started, and it's still possible to do, is to make infinite Boshes to throw at my opponent.
Oh my god.
So that becomes a lot more difficult, and that's where I was missing a few things. I got to change some stuff out. I need a liquid metal coating because I need to turn Slowbad into an artifact
to be able to sacrifice it to the...
No. So I could be able to untap using like Clock of Omens.
Oh.
Because I need to keep untapping and tapping Slowbad. So I do have ways to do it with like Thornbite Staff. So if I have enough things that are getting killed, I could be tapping and untapping him. A lot of these combos, I likely could have somebody dead beforehand, but I could theoretically say that I'm doing it all in the service of making infinite Slowbad. I mean,
infinite Boshes, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I feel Boshes. As if maybe it is one. It's a Bosh Iron Golem is such an interesting card. And, like, here's something that I've realized over the years of talking with friends, with new players, and with old players, is that everyone's knowledge of Magic in its entirety is very spotty. Like, for example, a friend of mine, my buddy Derek, who's been on the podcast before a few times, he took a photo with Mark Rosewater, for example, a few years ago. He's like, "Hey guys, check this out." I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's sweet." And like, over half of our play group didn't know who he was with.
Oh my gosh.
We're like, I'm like, "Bro, that's Mark Rosewater. He's like one of the big design guys like right now." And they're like, "I don't know who that is." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." Then now it's like with Bosh Iron Golem. Do people know who Bosh Iron Golem is?
Well, that's what I was gonna say. So, you know, real quick, speaking of Mark Rosewater, I mean, one of the greatest things that I ever had is that I got to take my photo with Mark Rosewater at San Diego Comic Con 2013. I want to say 13. And that was great because Mark Rosewater is like the same height as me. So I didn't feel short for once.
Oh, right.
Because Mark Rosewater is like 5'3 or 5'4. And so I felt like the same height. But at least I wasn't the shortest person in the room. So Bosh Iron Golem. So this is kind of going through the story. As I mentioned before, briefly, Slowbad was an artificer. He got kicked out by the Quark clan, basically for being a heretic. So the Quark clan developed out of the beliefs of Quark, who is another amazing goblin who has no thumbs, who basically posited that the world of Mirrodin was was hollow. And set out to prove this. And when he came back, his own clan ended up killing him, basically, as if he was like a heretic for say, like figuring this out. But they developed this clan that developed around him that were artificers. Well, they actually kicked Slowbad out, and he lived by himself. And he lived by himself, kind of working in the inner workings of Mirrodin until he met the elf Glissa. And she had been kicked out of the group that she had kind of belonged to and grown up with. And so they both had like been kicked out of these. And what he was rebuilding was this golem that he had found, his original art as he's working on this golem, which is Bosh. And the three of them end up kind of working together to bring down Memnarch. Memnarch, from a Magic card perspective, people don't know, Memnarch is one of the most feared early commanders.
A scourge.
Mono blue, turn everything into artifacts and steal it from your opponents. I mean, early days, that was like one of the heights of rude things to do.
I recall. I was there. I was there, Hobbs. I was, you know, I was a teenager. I was about 16 or 17, and my buddies were like, what if I play Memnarch? And I'm like, why are you a horrible person? And we, you know, it's been over about 12 years now of Commander, and he's like, what if I build, oh geez, Witherbloom, Belladros Witherbloom, with like 20, like tutors and like all these other things, and we're like, why are you still doing this? It's been 12 years. Like, why do you subject us to this torment? And he's like, because it's fun.
This is the Memnarch thing all over again.
It's never changed. Different colors, same thing. Yeah. So.
So Memnarch was also the main bad guy in the original Mirrodin block. Basically, Karn created Mirrodin to be mathematical perfection and then just peaced out. And he left Memnarch in charge. Memnarch kind of just lost it and also was trying to seek getting a spark because that was the whole thing of learning from Karn. And Karn had to come back. And the people that were mainly opposing were Bosch, Slobad, and Glissa, like I said, the three best friends. Fun fact, Slobad actually ends up sparking during this.
Oh!
And he gives it up to bring back basically everybody who had died, to bring back all these people who had been killed. He gives up the spark to do that. And the sad part is, that's why I said, they then unceremoniously killed Slobad off screen. So basically, when we returned to Mirrodin, the whole plane was in like disarray after what the three of them had done to stop Memnarch, and the Phyrexians were starting to invade. Yeah. And they come out of underneath the ground, and Slobad just gets trampled by like a horde of goblins.
Oh my god.
He straight up just gets ran over and killed.
Jeez. And oh my god.
So it's like Slobad got done dirty. And then the next time we see him, so Bosch is 8 mana, 6/7. That has trample and has 4 sacrifice, so red and 3, sacrifice an artifact, and you dealt damage equal to the sacrificed artifact's converted mana cost to a creature or player. So basically, Bosch flung things at people. And yeah, I think that it's just really the flavor text is great on it. As Glissa searches for the truth about Memnarch, Bosch searches to unearth the secrets of his past. So he also has this kind of like unknown past. And I think that was the cool thing of them being kind of these three friends that found each other, like found family. And that's why they did Slobad dirty.
Well, and in your case.
And then Glissa gets Phyrexian and
I. Yeah. And like in your case, and like in your case as a fan, right? Like you're like, oh man, Slobad's great. And then they trample over him literally. And you're like, no, my boy. And then years later, you know. Someone taps you on your shoulder, and you're like, Hubs, it's Slobad. You're like, oh, and you turn around, and it's Slobad's head stuck on top of Bosch Iron Golem, and like your old wounds open, and you're like, how could they do this to me specifically? It's like...
Yeah, I felt very personally attacked by Wizards of the Coast, and I am fairly certain that there is at least... There has to be somebody in the company that did this.
Well, because very obviously... Gavin Verhey specifically made this one for you very specifically.
I think he did the other bit too. I think Gavin is on my watch.
Gavin's part of your 13 reasons why. It's just like, oh no.
I say this as if like Gavin hasn't been on my podcast. like as if they're just like, it makes zero sense.
Just lock everything down, all your other co-hosts leave, and the light somehow turn off on his side. Yeah. He's like, what's going on? You're like, I have some questions, Mr. Verhey.
But anyway, yeah, so it's been a roller coaster for me the last year or so when it comes to Slobad. Yeah.
Well, this thing I'll want to go back to later, but we'll finish here, because what I find so hilarious is that Slobad makes Bosch Iron Golem tokens, and you're like, well, I still gotta have Bosch in the deck, obviously, but what I find funny is that, like, so let's say you do accumulate all of these rebuilding counters on Slobad, but you're also making, like, a surplus of mana, so then you...
Yeah.
you remove counters, make a Bosh, use mana to sack that Bosh, find a way to untap Slowbad, reactivate it, make another Bosh. And this is all, now I'm suddenly realizing how absolutely messed up this is that, like, Slowbad's like, be free, my child, be free, my friend, sacrifice, blow up, and then I'll build you back up. It's like, that is, I don't know if that's friendship or something more psychotic. Like, some.
Well, it's a goblin, so, you know, the line between these are not necessarily that far off. So, you know, so like, as I said, I tried to stick to a lot of, you know, a lot of cards that really would show up in these things. You know, so the way I probably most moved out was I included both versions of Duretti because it's the only goblin planeswalker we have. And I've always wanted to build Duretti. Plus, we don't know what Duretti was doing during March of the Machines, right? Like, Fiaria, or is that where the plane for?
Wait, which one?
Yeah. The plane for
Fiora, yeah, that's the plane.
So it's got to have had things opened up. So who knows? I think the Reddy would fight against that. I have Karn, Scion of Urza, because Karn, obviously. I needed a version. I needed a representation of Karn. I included Ugin for mana reduction. Ugin was being a lazy asshole, as he normally is. Oh, I didn't ask if I'm allowed to swear.
Oh, you're totally 100%. Go nuts.
Cool.
Ugin, that fucking piece of shit. There we go.
Yeah, I was like, if you let me talk about Ugin, bombs are going to drop because of how badly he treated his younger brother, Nicol Bolas, unfairly over the years. And during the war, what was he doing? Bolas couldn't planeswalk, stuck in the meditation realm. Did we see Ugin show up to help everybody stop the Phyrexians? No. He had to babysit.
No. Because here's the thing, right? Here's the thing, right? So the reason why Ugin was like catching some rays and getting his hand going is because Jace was like, "We're gonna kill the Eldrazi," and Ugin's like, "Nah, don't do that, fam." And Jace said, "Eat dirt, old man." And it took him and his new fancy gate.
Gate watch?
I don't know why I said it. I can't remember what I said the other day. I was doing a recording and I said oath watch, and I was like, I said it and I'm like, no, that's not right, and I just kept going and I was like, no, that's terrible. But yeah, it's like, you know, so then Ugin's like, well, look, if these young whippersnappers are gonna blow up my life's work, I guess, like, I'm out. I'll watch my brother, and that's my retirement. Fuck y'all. And that's why...
Screw you guys, I'm going
I don't
home.
Know why.
Back to the meditation realm.
You know, we could be going for hours in Magic Story of, like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah.
You know...
What are they doing right now?
And I actually find it funny, because I now have sort of, like, a similar comparison to your relationship with Slowbad. And that... people's reaction to Audric as a character and his transformation into a vampire.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
And not only that, then the reflection in his magic cards, where, like, you go through, like, this community matters or creatures matters, in combat versions of himself. And then people are like, oh, he got red and he's a weaker version of me. Well, I'm like, yeah, here's my new primer on my Audric Blood Curse deck, because I love this guy so much and you all suck. But also wizards, next time you're going to make him really good, right? For me personally, because I do love the version of him and I love playing the deck, but, like, I also know that there's a lot of stigma towards it. And it's like, you know, I was not as hurt and wounded of him becoming a vampire and getting a quote unquote strictly worse card compared to you, who literally has two versions of your favorite characters cobbled together on one card, and you're like, my boys! What have you done to my boys?
And I will say, if you know, if anybody from Wizards is listening, aka, like, if Gavin is somehow
I mean, that'd be impressive.
we need to get them back, though, with Glissa. We need some love back for Glissa. They need to have that full reunion.
You know? Just, you know, wink. the reunion? Anyway.
You can't see it right now, but I'm winking.
I need to get up real close so you can hear my eyeball having...
Oh, that's
no,
creepy.
Let's not do that. Yeah, no, I'm creepy. Not doing it. No.
That's some Phyrexian horror let shit
me,
right
yeah,
there.
Let me, yeah. You know, I think I remember around the time of Phyrexia All Will Be One was releasing, I think I tried making a mock-up version of Slowbad, Glissa, and... Bosch as like an unholy amalgamation where they like I took all abilities of them and kind of like spliced them together, and it was absolutely terrible. I'm like, this design sucks, but what if though?
But what if? I mean it was really funny when all of a sudden it became apparent, you know, that you're like at first we just saw, oh cool, a slow bad card, and you're like, oh, he's Phyrexianized, and he's, you know, his corpse is being attached to a Phyrexian robot, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh no, that's 100% Bosch.
Who like, else? Yes, yeah, there's no that, one like, else it would be.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. The realization sat in though that it wasn't like some random golem or some random just, you know, Phyrexian altar that happened. Yeah. That, yeah. There was levels of understanding that went into my horror around that
part. It's the initial tap on your shoulder where they're like, it's slow bad, and you're Bob Parr from The Incredibles with the happy face. And then the very quick sudden reaction as reality sets in, and you're the you're the black and white horrified face version of him. You're like, Oh my god, Oh my god. What have they done? Yep. They definitely knew how to prey on everyone's expectations of the set, and then they somehow managed to go like an extra step further of how absolutely, on one hand, Phyrexia All Will Be One and March of the Machines is a terrifying concept because of what the Phyrexians have always been capable of the entire time. And we'd seen them throughout some of the sets, like, doing things, showing up on a plane, getting away with something, and then peacing out. And then you also realize El Schnorn's a dumb idiot. It was like, let's open all of the planes simultaneously and invade them. You're like, wait, hold on a second here.
Yeah. No, there was a lot. There was a lot. It was an emotional roller coaster. More than War of the Spark.
And now we can have emotional catharsis by going to the charity event and playing your favorite side and being like, this is for you, slow bad, and then you crush everyone at the table.
I mean, I guess that asks the question, right? I guess, you know, whose side is slow bad on?
I mean, but you know what? He's okay, right? Like, he's
actually okay, and he no longer has the type Phyrex.
So I think that answers her question right there.
But as the game is playing out,
well,
you know, there's times that this deck may lean a little heavier towards the Phyrexian side.
Yeah, I see the little bits and pieces here and there where I'm like, yeah, Phyrex is never too far off.
Yeah, they're never too far off.
Yeah, that is always the this is kind of the thing that I wanted to get into, because obviously we've had a bunch of Universes Beyond announcements be declared very close in relation to each other within like the last 2 weeks almost, where the game is now expanding beyond the Magic universe, and now we're getting all these characters from all these different franchises, and you know, Doctor Who's out and hitting game tables.
Yes, it is. I played my first game with it.
A bunch of those cards are absolutely disgusting and very cool, and I've invested in some of those cards, and it's just very cool to see. But
it's also, it's very flavorful. Yes. That set is flavor.
It's got so much stuff in it. I am no Whovian, you know. I was there in the Tumblr days of the Super Hulock. So I
all you're taking me down is you keep saying this, and all I'm hearing is actually Aslan's voice from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Like, do not cite the old magic to me.
I was there.
I was there. Or, you know, it's either that or
Elrond. Yes. Right? Yeah, exactly.
I was there when men failed.
I obviously recognize a lot of the stuff in Doctor Who just through, like, pop culture osmosis, through, like, knowing people or just being online, but I obviously don't know everything, so I was shocked when all this other stuff came out where I'm like, I don't even know who, like, all these people are, but the point of what I'm trying to get to here is that Commander, to me, okay, let's go back to the Richard Garfield intended ways, like, let's go back to the beginning, right? So, magic's basic premise, from a sort of narrative standpoint, is you and a wizard are having a wizard duel, and you're casting all these spells and summoning all these creatures, and it's a battle of wits and strength and will, and whoever comes out on top is the winner. And then you fast forward a few decades till Commander is made, and then you're like, I now have an army from across the multiverse handpicked into a 100-card deck. And now we're getting into the new reality of some people, I've called it like the Smash Bros. Reality, but like this is really the crossover of the century of, you know, Megatron is facing the 13th Doctor. And meanwhile, you got your deck here where your Slowbad is from an alternate reality where he was actually okay the whole time, you know?
See, so I really like, I don't mind Universes mm-hmm. Beyond, and I really don't. I definitely was on the fence, and it was more to do with how they would treat the property.
Yes, yeah.
And Lord of the Rings was the first real test for me to be like, okay, this is the first one that I actually have investment in.
Right.
Doctor Who was the second, so they came like close together. But at the same time too, I was thinking about this. I was going to make a post about this actually earlier today, so it's funny that you brought it up. That when I was a kid, I definitely remember having these like genre crossing like play games.
Yeah, who doesn't? Right? I mean, like
that's the whole thing. Like, I don't understand people are upset.
And like, here's the thing, right? Like, this comes down to how heavily invested, like not monetarily, emotionally. How emotionally invested are you in this form of media or media, like pop culture media in general, that you're like, I love magic so much, I don't want it to never be anything else. Versus yeah. It's a cool conduit. There's some questionable,
it's a shift. It is a shift that we're
it feels more radical because how recent magic time-wise it all is.
Well, in some ways too, because it, like, but the like magic's been around as magic,
right?
And only magic for close to 30 mm-hmm. years. You know, prior to any Universe Beyond, prior to major crossovers. I mean, there's been lots of changes within it, but it still was quote unquote magic to people. Now, I will say, what's funny is that's not always been the case. People had very strong reactions that planeswalkers were not magic. But I mean, within kind of the universe and the world that it represents. What's funny though is we're talking multiverses and planeswalking, right? Like, for one thing, I don't know anything more planeswalking than Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Right? Like, literally. But yes, I mean, so it's like there's a shift in it. And I definitely feel that it was a little strange and I had to get used to the idea, and I've just become more okay with it. But I really was just remembering back today to my childhood of like, yeah, and then He-Man comes over here and he attacks the Smurfs. I'm dating myself horribly for all of you out there. But I mean, like, you know,
some
like,
poor
like,
child listening to this is like, what's a Smurf? And you're like, go back, child, turn away.
Like, they know what He-Man is, and I'm wondering why I'm talking about He-Man, even though I'm like, right, okay, that one's back around again. Have the Smurfs come back yet? But anyway, I mean, I played with my toys from across worlds. Like, my Star Wars action figures were definitely getting play alongside other
games. Yeah, for sure.
100%.
You know, I had a Woody from Toy Story, and I had Bionicles, and I had Pokemon, and God knows whatever else I happen to have around. Random insects and dinosaurs and whatever, and, like, you know, world's your oyster. Your imagination just makes it work for you. And now we're in a reality where it's like, on one hand, yes, it's all capitalist investments and crossover events between big, like, multimedia companies that have, like, more money than God. But, I don't know. Hey, Iron Man shows up in, like, 2 years. I'll be happy. I'm cool.
I mean, I have a daughter. Okay, so this is funny. Right before I came down to record with you, I told you, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, the times I wasn't quite sure. I needed to do the, you know, bedtime with my kids. And so who I was doing bedtime with was my older daughter, Gwen, who is literally in a, like, Ghost Spider Gwen
pajamas. Oh, right, yeah. Now. Oh, yeah.
So we already have, like, I've got a Sir Gwyn deck for Gwen. But, like, magic-wise, she's shown interest in some stuff and gotten excited about it. We were talking to my mom on the phone, and I mentioned this, that there's going to be now a crossover, because my mom understands this concept of crossovers, and she had known about the Doctor Who
set. Oh, how wonderful. And, I'm glad she understands.
Oh, my mom's flat-out nerd. Like, I actually got it from my mom and my dad and my uncle. I was having a discussion with some people about this the other day. Like, I am such a lucky person in that respect. Like, my mom, I think I posted the photo on the text message when I was dressed as Squee from
yes,
Vegas.
Yes, I think I remember that one, yeah.
My mom wrote back. It was like, I looked up that Goblin King card, and you need to bulk up. I'm like, well, first of all, mom, you looked up the wrong fucking card. But I mean, the fact that she would look, you know, like, looked up what looked like a Goblin King and found a card for it, right? So, like, she doesn't know magic, but she is very much, like, of the mindset of, this is cool. And so we were talking about this, and I mentioned this Marvel thing. I was like, you know, so within, like, the next year or two, there could be a, like, Spider-Gwen card. And my daughter lit up. Like, she's 4 and a half. You know, I she was all excited, right? Like, there could be a magic card that's Spider-Gwen. Like, yeah, kid, there can.
Yeah, like that is the thing of, like, I can't remember who said it earlier on Twitter, but we obviously, there's a lot of people that play Magic the Gathering. If you know where to go, or you, like, you know, people know of it in some capacity, right? But when you think about what can bring new people in to any type of game, and, you know, they sprinkled some Universes Beyond secret layers here and there, but then they're like, cool, here is Lord of the Rings. Well, Lord of the Rings is pretty big. And Doctor Who, obviously, another very big franchise for a lot of people. And they're doing all these alternate art treatments and all this other stuff that is obviously appealing to a lot of different people around the world. So, like, how do you get people's attention? Hey, there's Transformers. Well, that allowed me to bring my friend on to do an episode of the podcast here, where we talked about Transformers cards and, like, who they were. And as it turns out, you know, nobody knows who the fuck Slicer is, because Slicer is basically a nobody. Yet in CDH, yeah, became a very brief nightmare, and now people just make a bunch of Slicer memes. But then,
because like, there was a very clear, like, all in Slicer deck that could just easily kill two people and then die.
And then. Conversely, it's like, very obviously, yeah, we know who Megatron is, but then you also realize how absolutely messed up Megatron's, like, history is in terms of, like, comic books and stuff. You're like, but my friend, who, she knows magic a little bit, but she doesn't play, but I'm like, so there's this, there's all these Transformers cards, and there's also that flip one from, like, that special, like, Hasbro Silver Border version with, like, Grimlock and all, and sort of Dungeons and Dragons and all that. And she's like, that would be really cool. So who knows, you know, maybe if eventually she'll make the jump and play again. But, like, that is the goal. That is what's going to be happening. People were like, Street Fighter? I'm in. There you go. We got Street Fighter people.
I don't want to say, and I said this yesterday kind of at this thing, like, I want people to enjoy things that want to enjoy it. I do think that there is criticism to be made. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
I have no problem with being critical. I think there's ways to be critical of, obviously, of Wizards, of Hasbro, of doing products at the pace that we are doing it that I as a human can no longer keep up with as I could when I was in my 30s to even know all the cards.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's a lot that I could say. I also, sadly, fall back on that realist side of where it sucks. And I'm sorry for people out there. But for older players that maybe leave the game, it's like a Hydra. Huh? I mean, if we're going to do the Marvel thing, right? Like, two new players take their place. And it is true that those players will never have known a world where maybe this wasn't always the case for Magic.
Yeah. Like,
and it becomes a question, right? So, like, in a couple of years from now, most people will have known. It's kind of like me, right? Like, it's that divide of Planeswalkers versus not. Who played with them versus who played prior to Planeswalkers being a thing.
Yeah. I also look at it as, like, being a fan of a pop culture franchise for the longest time and the proverbial jumping of the shark for that individual is always different and it's always subjective. I know some people right now who are incredibly indifferent and they're like, obviously I'm not going to be going out of my way to buy like bulk product of Doctor Who, but they're like, I might grab a card or two, you know? And there are some people who are not looking forward to their Commander games being covered in garish artwork that clashes with each other, because you do have the Gandalf versus Megatron versus Chun-Li versus the whatever Doctor now. And that is the unfortunate reality we're in. Not even getting into like organized, like official tournament play of like Modern or Legacy or something like that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, where we've seen things like Orcish Bowmasters make a splash. You know, where we've seen some cards from these sets actually come up. And or the one ring is the other huge kind of one that I can think of. I will say too, I'm somebody that loves alternate treatments, but they make it very hard for me cognitively to play games as easily as I used to.
Like that is the one big thing that I think most people can probably agree with, regardless of our like official individual stances on like, is Universe Beyond that the world, the game ending thing? No, it's not. It's just another thing that's being added to the game. But there's a lot of cognitive dissonance that comes with these cards showing up. And, you know, it's all Magic at the end of the day, like the rules and everything, like it functions within the rules of Magic and therefore it is a Magic card.
Well, I mean, even Slobad, right? As we talked about at the beginning of this, this version of it does work within the rules, and that's something that's cool.
Yeah.
That they make things that do still work no matter
what.
You know,
maybe we might see a version of that effect on something at some point in the future, and maybe we won't see that for a few years yet. But, you know, eventually, not everything can or will be showing up in sort of a Magic skin. We know that they've been doing that for some of the Secret Lairs over time because they're small collections of it. But we're not really going to be seeing Warhammer, the Warhammer cards, Lord of the Rings, and Doctor Who make that big jump into Magic, like Magic skin. No. But we'll see Transformers at some point in the future and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But I mean, even going beyond Universe Beyond, just the amount of Magic, the alternate art treatments for Secret Lairs.
Oh, yeah.
The multiple treatments per set for the same card. There's a lot of struggle for me to look across a board now and easily read the board.
Oh, state. And not even getting into it's like, oh, let's use Spell Table. Well, Spell Table has no fucking idea either.
No, yeah. Well, but I mean, if I sit down at an in-person game, this happened to me in Vegas, the amount of attention that I had to give is very different in the last 5 years. Or, whoa, God. See, Magic timeline doesn't matter. That would put us back before the pandemic. That did not really, this exploded after. In the last couple of years, the ability for me to just easily look at a board state and parse it is gone way down. And that's not just a matter of like, oh, I don't know cards because so many have come out, which is also something that's difficult for me as somebody that is older, whose memory isn't as good as it used to be.
And you're busy, too. And just,
doesn't get to see all the sets, right? It used to be I'd have to memorize X number of cards per year versus now more. So I have to ask a lot more about what the cards do, but adding in the visual piece is another element that I do struggle
with. Yeah.
Like, okay, is that a soul ring? I think it's a soul ring.
I mean, it has some kind of ringish shape to it, but, you know, I don't want to be making any assumptions, you know?
But yeah, like, I just look across the board. I can't, I've definitely done this where I'm, cards that I clearly at one point in my life would know, I don't with alternate treatments on it. Oh, okay, that's the X so-and-so secret lair version of, well, let's take something like Food Chain. Because there was a recent
one. There was a recent one, yeah.
Yeah.
There's, yeah.
But
it's...
That's part of the game.
I found, like, a few years ago, there were some people who are, who, and they've still talked about it, that cognitive...
It's accessibility. Yeah, like... It's like, what a lot of it is. It's kind of your cognitive resource load. That just, like, how much, basically, brain power, I mean, or different elements of it you're having to use to play a game of Magic.
And, you know, I'm someone that can handle unknown information and take it in stride, and then if I end up losing an information, then that creates an impression for me to try to remember that type of effect or strategy or whatever happens. But when we think about it in general, when it comes to, like, we all are kind of in the online consumer space, whether that's on Twitter or we're part of these Discord communities or whatever, right? Like, we are putting in an effort to be part of the community. However, we also have other commitments that take up our time, take up our energy, take up our brain space that, like, you know, I come home from work and, you know, my girlfriend gets home a few hours later. And I'll spend time with the cats and chase them away from my keyboard and my cards. And, you know, I have stuff to do. And I'm going to be able to sometimes sit down for games of Magic where I'm not going to be able to recognize stuff because of that visual element or whatever. Or a new set comes out, or spoilers or previews are coming out for the day and I have to deal with that now. And that's not even getting into some people who maybe work 10-hour days, or they have a child or two children, or they're caretakers, or they're whatever, or they work two jobs. Like, there's this extra element of, like, I really don't expect anyone to continue to try to make that extra effort for a game to try to lock all that cognitive information in, because it's just impossible at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
But at the same time, it also allows people to ask questions and engage in the game in a different way. Because now, while there's all this information and it might sour the experiences for a lot of people, I also think it's kind of great to be able to sit down in a game and not be like, I know exactly what that card does. And now, like, okay, that's interesting. How does that work? And how do you intend to use it? And that's why I've always liked Commander, because not even factoring in new sets coming out, everyone is always busting out some old card. And I say old, but I mean, like, whether that is from 93 exactly on the dot, or it's in 2000, or it's in 2010, there's always a quote-unquote old card that gets thrown out. There, everyone's like, what the fuck is that? And you know what? That still exists. We're now just also adding in new cards that are doing that. I always find that neat. Yeah, I always find it fun.
Well, I laugh because those are now, what's funny now is the new cards are the ones that are making me say what the fuck. And then the people I'm playing with are looking at half my deck and being
what the fuck does any of this do?
I mean, I started doing my daily card thing and half of these are from like
Invasion. Oh, some of them I'm like, I know exactly what that is. And sometimes I'm like, I have no fucking clue what that is.
Yeah. And all of these, I think almost every single one so far has been in a deck. That I play. Yeah, like, these are all been from cards that I play in a deck, or ones that just that did pop into mind. Like, Ovenmancer just popped into my mind today for I have God know what reason. I saw my little stuffed sheep sitting next to me. But, yeah. It's fun. It is fun. And that's the thing. I like there is an element of being able to see kind of rediscovery with some of these old cards. It's a second rediscovery. I think when Commander started, a lot of players were rediscovering cards that they hadn't seen since for many, many years. Yeah.
It's, You know, I am someone who tries to engage with a game in such a way that I try to emulate a very casual attitude because I don't know everything, for sure. And I have an approximate knowledge of a lot of cards and effects that allows me to engage in the game in a comfortable way that doesn't require a lot of brain power, to put it mildly. And then when someone does finally, like, put something down into play that makes me be like, what the fuck, that's when it also, like, it makes it fun to be like, okay, let's engage the brain a little bit. And learn from this experience, and then, I don't know, maybe forget about it or lock it in, you know? It's a different thing for everyone. I know, yeah. It's a very, it's always going to be a controversial thing, and with Twitter the way it is right now, it's also very exhausting to listen to people talk about their positivity as well as their negativity, and I'm just good to sit in my corner, sip of my pina colada, and see what else actually comes out. Because, you know, the stuff we saw today, for example, like for Ixalan and Jurassic Park and all that, that seems pretty neat. I'll have to hold my opinion on a lot of things till more stuff shows up.
I'm for it. I'm
oh, yeah.
Gotten a lot better at holding opinions over the years.
Yeah. But we have managed to go over the hour as anticipated.
Yeah.
So maybe perhaps this is a good place to wrap it up. Hobbs, thank you for coming on and joining me today. It's been super fun.
No, this is awesome. Thanks for. I'm glad that we finally made this happen.
You know, game wise, yeah, of course. Obviously, we need to get games in, but obviously, also for this has been
just to sit down and talk. It's my favorite thing to do.
Hobbs, where can people find you? What do you do? What podcast do you do? What do you do?
So, I can be found on Twitter at HobbsQ. Basically, I can be found anywhere on the internet as HobbsQ since about 1998. Goblin Lore Podcast is the podcast that I co-host. We just passed 5 years and 200 episodes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I also running now a Twitter account for Better Days MTG. So if people don't know, that's kind of it's been a hashtag, and we created an account to be able to just, like, retweet that content so that people could find all of the ones out there just using the hashtag daily to post either videos or tweets about their mental health, to kind of just break down barriers for talking about mental health, to really break down stigma. So myself and Ryan Nicholas, Tron is Bad, are really kind of just trying to encourage people to basically, these conversations were happening. We want them to be done in a very intentional way and get them to where they can kind of be in, like, collected in an easy place to find. So, yeah.
As someone who goes to therapy, it has been, I can say that I'm someone who probably doesn't need it as much as other people, but I think there needs to be a constant reminder that we experience life very differently from one another, and therefore sometimes that requires different check-ins, like different types of check-ins of, like, you know, how's your day going? How's your week going? How are things going, you know? And some people are able to you know, sweep it under the rug for a really long time, and some people don't have the tolerance for the small and the big things that happen on the day-to-day, and we just kind of just need to make sure that, you know, hey, you might be feeling good, but always be sure to check in with yourself and with other people to make sure that you know what's going on inside your head. And, you know, any given week and every given day, I'm pretty good. But sometimes I'll show up to my therapy and be like, oh, yeah, I guess there's that one thing I need to talk about, and kind of get to air it out, figure out how I want to handle it, how I want to tackle it, and how I'm able to, you know, have a better day.
Ha! I love it. I love that.
But yeah, so all the links for all that stuff will, as usual, be in the description, including your fancy slow bad deck that won't have that particular slow bad on it. yes. But I will attempt to provide image. Actually, you know what? For this episode, I could probably just use that image as the cover art. So who knows? We'll see. We'll let you know what's up. But yeah, that is it for this episode of Unconventional. And we'll see you on the next one. Well, geez, that was a lie. Yeah. So,
Yeah, this is going to be the last episode under the branch of Uncommon Commander and Unconventional. Kind of crazy to think that I've been doing this for over 2 years now. And it's been kind of a weird journey. I've kind of always wanted to do entertainment in some way, and when I was a kid, I did super crappy YouTube videos that will never see the light of day. And you know, I've gone to school for 3D animation, dropped that like a hot potato, but I always wanted to kind of be involved in some form of entertainment or hobby stuff for like years. And you know, pandemic hit, and I realized I had a lot more free time communicating with people online for magic stuff, playing on Spell Table, going on streams. That became more of a reality, and this has kind of been the project that was the result of all that. So I have like an untold of amount of people that have been guests on this stream for over the years. So I will not go through the exhaustive list because there'd be a whole lot, but I will kind of narrow it down. First and foremost, to my girlfriend, who has indulged me over the years, arranged to get me this fancy blue Yeti microphone that I've been using. At some point after, I've been using like a gaming headset for recording for years. Thanks to Fitz for being the intro guy for the last couple seasons, and thank you to Gabe, aka Icetep, for making this super cool intro that I've been using for the last little bit, and I wish I got some more use out of it. And then also thank you to the only other person that I know that comments on Spotify. Brayden, you're a champ. I thank you a whole lot for taking your time out of your day to answer the questions that I put out every week. You are, outside of my friends and outside of the people that listen, that I know listen to this, you're the only stranger that acknowledges and responds. So that's pretty cool. So I thank you for doing that. But now comes the question of what comes next and what's going to be happening. So everything's going to be staying here on your podcast source where you're able to see these episodes. But you may notice that the title cards of like the page will change and the title will change. And I did announce this on Twitter, but I am shifting gears. And while I will be stopping Uncommon Commander for the next little bit, possibly, or extended, or who knows, I will be starting a new podcast called The Hero's Blade Vibe Check. You know, that thing that I tried doing and then never did it consistently. we're going to be doing that with Empress Quinn, who has been on this podcast a lot of times. Quinn's a really good friend of mine. We shoot the shit all the time on Twitter and play a lot of games. I give Quinn endless grief over, playing a fairy deck with Toxril in the command zone. And Fair always an advocate of the meaningful reduction of life totals via combat mostly. So we'll be shifting gears. I'll be changing and overhauling the page and everything. And, let's see what happens in the future. And I look forward to kind of changing things up, talking about what's going on in the community, how games have been going for myself and Quinn recently, and just kind of shoot the shit bi-monthly, not bi-weekly, because I guess bi-weekly, as it turns out, has two meanings, so bi-monthly, give or take. Huh, guess that's it.